You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM.
The United States and Russia are the two largest arms exporters in the world, selling hundreds of billions of dollars worth of military hardware each year. These two countries so dominate the industry, it's easy to overlook everyone else. But Canada does appear on international lists of the world's top arms exporters, and arms companies are looking to increase business. Richard Sanders is coordinator of COAT, that's a coalition to oppose the arms trade. It's a national organization dedicated to exposing and working against the Canadian trade in armaments. And he joins me on the phone this morning from Ottawa. Hello, Richard.
Yes, hi. How are you doing?
Good, thanks. Now, the U.S. and Russia do seem to be in a category all their own, but Canadian arms exports are still significant. Where does Canada stand in the ranking?
Well, according to the U.S. Congressional Research Service, we're about ninth place. I think that's the latest place they've put us on the list of the world's top arms exporters.
And are we going up or going down?
We're pretty consistently at about that spot over the many years I've been looking at it. It depends how you count the numbers. It's not a simple thing, and but we're usually about eighth or ninth or so, or tenth or whatever on the list. The United States really is in a league of its own, though. It's way above everybody else.
So we got the United States, and then we've got everybody else. But I guess many Canadians would be surprised to learn that we're eighth or ninth in terms of arms exporters.
Yeah, I think most Canadians would be very surprised to learn that. We have this image of our country and of ourselves as being great peacekeepers and peace lovers, and we think of our government as being promoting human rights and democracy and peace around the world. I guess that's been a little bit tarnished by the war in Afghanistan, but still, I think people in Canada think of this country as not being a big weapons exporter, but in fact we're the largest exporter to the United States, and most of what we produce does go to the United States. Half of what we produce is exported, and of that we export, about 75% goes to the U.S. And a lot of what we produce here in Canada is in the form of component parts that are assembled in the U.S. into major weapon systems. Like, I found about 40 major weapon systems, like we're talking fighter bomber planes and major pieces of weaponry like that that have essential Canadian components in that were used in the Iraq War, for example. So about 40 different major weapon systems used in the Iraq War wouldn't have functioned at all without Canada because of the Canadian components that are assembled in the U.S. into those weapon systems. So that's how most of the Canadian military equipment ends up being used in wars, is we sell it to the U.S. and then they go out and wage wars with it.
Is it difficult to find out information about what Canadian manufacturers produce?
Well, you get a certain amount. You get quite a bit of information by looking at the manufacturers' websites. They don't give you the contract information, and then you can also get some information from the Canadian government sources. But for example, the Department of Foreign Affairs and International Trade has been putting out an annual report since 1990. Although the last few years it hasn't been put out every year, they release information not about the companies, but they tell you what kind of military equipment they break it down into different categories of military equipment, and they give dollar figures, and then they list the countries that we export it to, but they leave out the United States. So there's 75% of the data is missing from the government's reports. So they'll give fairly detailed information about the categories of Canadian military equipment that are being exported to all the other countries, but not to the main country that we export to, like 75-80%, which goes to the United States. But you can go to the U.S. sources and get data on Canadian military exports to the U.S. from the U.S. government sources, which is something that I have accessed and put onto the Coalition to Oppose the Arms Trade website. So there's Wiki Weapons Canada. I put up there tens of thousands of contract contracts, Canadian military contracts to the U.S., the details of all this stuff that we're exporting to them for their major weapon systems.
So it sounds like it's all out there, but you have to kind of dig a little bit.
Well, it's not all out there, but you do have to dig a lot. And the media, the mainstream corporate media, that is, doesn't dig. And they just basically, I think, generally see themselves as being in the business of reporting what the government says.
Is the Canadian government, does the Canadian government have a role in helping companies to increase their business, or component companies to increase their business?
Yes, they do. And it's not just components, but that's the main thing that we do. We don't produce that many major complete weapon systems, but we do build some. Does the government help to promote it? Sure. They in quite a number of different ways. They give money to war industries. They invest in these war industries. Have given away a couple, maybe $2 billion worth of given away $2 billion over the last 20, 30 years to war industries as what they call investments to help create jobs. But, of course, it's the worst way to create jobs ever conceived of because it's so capital-intensive. I mean, you'd be far better off if you really did want to create jobs, then you could invest it in hospitals or schools or daycare or, you know, anything but weapons. Plus, you'd be then, if you were investing in those useful things, you'd be getting useful stuff out of it instead of just helping to, you know, overthrow governments around the world so you could put in business-friendly regimes or keeping governments in power that already are nice and business-friendly and letting Canadian corporations go in and steal all the resources.
Now, as you mentioned, you mentioned the Iraq War. It is now the 10th anniversary of that war and the invasion of Iraq. What was Canadian involvement? To what extent was Canada involved in the Iraq War? Could you talk about that a little
more? I'm really glad that you asked that and that you framed it in the sense of what was our involvement, because the first thing that the media usually says is Canada wasn't involved. Canada said no. Canada refused to join. Canada declined. You know, all these ways of expressing that Canada wasn't involved. Canada didn't participate. And this week has been an orgy of such stories, either criticizing the government for not joining or complimenting the Liberal government for not joining. But one way or the other, all the mainstream corporate media is saying that we didn't join, we didn't participate, we weren't involved. But we were really involved. Canada was probably more involved than any other country besides Britain and the United States. I think that we were more involved than any other country besides those two main countries, and yet we have this reputation for not having been involved. I've put together a list of about 20 important ways that Canada, the Canadian government, was involved. It's just a huge list. You want me to go through some of the ways that we were involved?
I think what we'll do, give me a couple, and then we'll direct people to your website. But do give me a couple.
Oh, okay. Well, we had three Canadian generals that were deputy commanders leading tens of thousands of troops in the Iraq War. We had a Canadian commodore who was heading up an international naval fleet in the Persian Gulf, which escorted and protected U.S. Warships into place so they could carry out the shock and awe bombardment. We had billions of dollars in military equipment being sold to the U.S. for weapons systems that they used in Iraq. Those are a few things. We had pilots flying warplanes in missions in Iraq, three different kinds of warplanes. We supplied two different kinds of warplanes for the thing. Now, I'm not saying we couldn't have done more, but we certainly were very involved. You know, I mean,
You know, it's interesting because I consider myself to be fairly well informed, but you're kind of making my jaw drop here.
Well, I, as I said, I have a list of 20 different ways that we're involved, and I think I just mentioned about three or four.
Okay. Now, I guess one of the interesting things about all this is, as you say, it's like the image and the reality are so different, but I know you've also written about how the language about used in the arms trade is also designed to hide what's really going in. Can you give me a few examples of that?
Well, the weapons dealers themselves, I call them, you know, war industries or weapons manufacturers, or if you wanted to be as neutral as possible, you could call them military producers or military companies, military industries, you know. Those would be neutral ways to put it. Just use the adjective military. But no, they have to call themselves defense industries, you see, because then it's all about defense. And the media calls them defense industries. And a lot of peace activists call them defense industries. And the word defense, well, I'm not against defense. I mean, I think people have a right to defend themselves. And we're not a peace movement. The anti-war movement isn't against defense. We're against war. We're against repression. We're against exploitation. We're against the 1% stealing the resources of all of these regimes, using their allies and their puppet states and all these different regimes. We're against, you know, exploitation and war and repression and human rights violations and all that sort of thing. We're not against defense. So by framing it as if these were defense industries, then we're setting ourselves up. It's a kind of a trap it's a linguistic trap they've laid for us, and I mean some people in the progressive movement or people in the NDP or the different organizations or whatever, they'll fall into that trap and call it defense. That's just one example. You know, it's a sort of very Orwellian thing. You know, it's doublespeak or newspeak. Even though people know that these are weapons that they're producing, they'll still call them defense.
Has the language changed since the conservatives came into power?
Well, that's another question that raises another whole issue, the difference between the liberals and the conservatives. I tend to see them as being very similar. You know, they both received over the decades many millions of dollars worth of donations, political donations from war industries. They were basically being backed by the war industries were backing both of those parties. The liberals are not that much different from the conservatives. I don't think things have changed that much under the conservatives. There's a tendency to think that the liberals were better, but I mean, partly because I'll give you an example. Lloyd Axworthy was promoting the anti-personnel landmines, and I'm promoting the abolition of those and the banning of anti-personnel landmines, and I'm no fan in any way, shape, or form of anti-personnel landmines, but the point is, while he was the foreign affairs minister, he was overseeing the increase in military exports of every single kind of military equipment you could imagine to all sorts of human rights abusers, not to mention the United States. So here he is, signing off on permits for the export of military equipment in every category you can imagine, and then he stands up on his soapbox and holds up this treaty on anti-personnel landmines and makes it seem as if everybody focuses on that one particular kind of weapon system, which Canada didn't make and didn't export anyway. And then he makes a big deal about it, which is, I mean, I'm not in favor of anti-personnel landmines, but it's part of a deception, you see, because he's holding up this one weapon system and saying, we're against these horrible, terrible weapons, and yet he's exporting every other kind of weapon system imaginable to all these human rights violators all around the world, and he gets this huge reputation, and people nominate him for the Peace Prize, and, you know, then he'd be in the category with Kissinger and Obama, you know, so I guess it's not necessarily a great thing to be a recipient of a Nobel Peace Prize. It doesn't necessarily mean you're actually a peace activist.
I guess. Well, thank you so much for talking to me this morning, Richard, and thanks for all the work that you do on this, and I'm going to point people towards your website so that they can find out more. Thank you.
Okay, thanks.
I've been speaking with Richard Sanders. He's National Coordinator of COAT, and that is the Coalition to Oppose the Arms Trade. Their website, again, is coat.ncf.ca.
This podcast was produced by the Red Eye Collective in Vancouver, BC. If you live in the Vancouver area and are interested in creating alternative radio with us, we'd love to hear from you. Contact us at redeye@coopradio.org.